Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Matt Alagaya. Today marks our final book review of 2015, and so we've invited in Kathy Rensenbrink, director of Quick Reads and contributing editor at The Bookseller, to round up her favourite book of the year, a recommendation for Christmas, and something she's looking forward to getting stuck into in 2016. All titles will be revealed over the next 15 minutes or so here on Monocle 24 on The Arts Review. Welcome to the show, Kathy. We're going to begin with a book you enjoyed in 2015, Kate Atkinson's novel A God in Ruins. This is a sort of companion to her last book, Life After Life, which followed a character called Ursula Todd through the First and Second World Wars. A God in Ruins is about Ursula's younger brother Teddy's life throughout the 20th century. Why have you selected this as one of your favourite books of the year, Kathy?
Well, I think Kate Atkinson is an extraordinary writer, and she creates amazing worlds. And she started creating this world in Life After Life and then continued it. And I remember coming to it with a certain degree of trepidation, because you never quite, you know, when you've really loved a book, as I did Life After Life, obviously I wanted more, but was worried about how she was going to do that. And then, if anything, it's actually even better. And I think the two novels together are such a significant literary achievement. And I think I can't think of anything that I would rather people read. I think they should read both together. And Life After Life, if people haven't already read Life After Life, then it opens in the snow. So it's a very good festive book if you're in a bit of the world where it snows at Christmas.
Right, very nice. I mean, you said that she creates these amazing worlds. Is that, I mean, I guess it's a historical period that we know quite well from literature and films. Is it the cast of characters that makes that world amazing, or is it more just the descriptions?
I mean, her characterisation is extremely strong. There's always lots of people. And I think, again, with both books, it's a portrait of a century as well as the examination of a group of connected people. So much of the 20th century from before the First World War right up to there are some characters watching the Queen's Jubilee barge go down the Thames. So it's an interesting view of England in the 20th century, I think. And I think she just is astonishing the way she, both books, I think, they're not only fiction, they're about fiction. And she has this astonishing knack of how she can make us care about her character so much while simultaneously reminding us that actually it's all made up and she's just an author making stuff up. And I think that is really, I can't think of anybody that does it better than she does. It's just a really astonishing way to read. And I don't want to give anything away, but there are so many points of interest in A God in Ruins when you just sort of go like, oh, that's what's going on here. And that sort of happens again and again. So it's such an entertaining, joyous and absorbing read.
Right. I mean, tell us a little bit about Teddy, the main character here. How is his life connected to the sort of, you know, the history, as you said, of the 20th century?
Well, so he's a pilot during the Second World War, a bomber pilot. And then you spend a lot of time seeing how his life has worked out and whether or not his life has worked out in the way that he expected. His daughter, Viola, is a novelist, becomes quite a famous novelist. So there's immense amounts of fun to be had through that. There's a brilliant bit where she talks about being on the main stage at Cheltenham. And so there's quite a lot of interesting stuff going on there, and a hilarious section where she's in York for the night and kind of gets very disorientated because she's surrounded by hen knights, people wearing Diamante t-shirts saying sluts go nuts in York. And that whole section is just hilarious, but also cut with this, you know, with the extremes of high drama and high emotion of what it was like to live in England during the Second World War, what it was like to be a pilot in a plane thinking about having to ditch into the open sea, what it was like to have comrades who would die and then have to go and see their wives. So it all sits, jostles for attention, and the action spins back and forward through the century with the different members of Teddy's family.
I was going to say, structurally, I mean, chronologically rather, it moves around quite a lot. I mean, what do you think that device kind of offers, offers Atkinson?
Well, I think it sort of broadens things out a bit, doesn't it, I think? I always think, as the reader, you keep slightly on your toes because you never know what you're getting next. And it means that the individual pieces are really strong. So sometimes you'll read about something that happens and then later on you'll kind of get a bit of a more of a background about why that happened, because you might move back in time. It's certainly successful and I enjoyed it. Of course, not all novels that play around with time do so successfully, so I think it's a risky strategy, but in this case it really pays off and it really works in the narrative.
Wonderful. A God in Ruins by Kate Atkinson is out now, published by Doubleday. We're going to turn now to a classic that was first published in 1945. The reason for talking about it is that it's just undergone a handsome makeover and might be fit for a festive purchase if you still have some Christmas shopping to do. The book we're talking about is Nancy Mitford's The Pursuit of Love. Cathy, aside from the recent re-release of this novel, why are you sort of recommending it, I guess, today?
Well, I just love this book. I think Nancy Mitford is such an interesting character, and her sisters were all interested. There were six of them. They were best friends with Churchill, best friends with Hitler. It's all completely crazy. There's lots of very good biographies to read about them. But Nancy, probably the cleverest and the sharpest of them all, was also an extraordinarily talented novelist. This novel, The Pursuit of Love, is quite autobiographical in that it describes a big, rambling, sort of poor but aristocratic family. So they're aristocratic but can't really afford heating, or don't agree with heating, perhaps. So, and the children are brought up not being educated because Uncle Matthew, who's the character in the novel that people believe is modelled on Nancy Mitford's father, sort of doesn't really believe in formal education for girls, thinks it just... it ruins them and gives them bad manners. So it's very, very, very funny. There's also a love story, and it's just the most beautiful, delightful, very short piece of writing, full of wit and jokes and laughter. I really love it. I would recommend this, you know, to anybody. I would recommend it to anyone, but equally it is quite good on the comfort reading. It's just so joyous that if you were, and it's so effortless, so if you were ever feeling poorly or in need of sort of spiritual sustenance in a very light, sort of light and airy way, then I think this would be a brilliant book.
I mean, does it feel dated at all? I guess, I mean, the cast of characters, as you said, is lifted from the aristocratic social scene which Mitford was a part of. I mean, can we still engage with these people, or do they feel a little bit like they're 60 years ago, you know?
It feels very recent, as in that you don't... It's completely of its time, but it's always very interesting, I think, when you read something written in 1945. Some things last and some things don't. It's quite difficult sometimes to work out why, but I think here the characters are so vivid that... and the characterisation is so well done, I suppose. And you learn all these interesting snippets about how life... was. I love detail. I always love details about rationing and bombing. I mean, I could endlessly read about the Second World War. So there's just brilliant bits about how Linda smuggles back a dog from when she's getting out of France as everything's sort of going badly wrong in the Second World War, and she manages to smuggle out a dog with her, and all her clothes are sent to her, and lots of interesting stuff about rationing and the awful diets that everybody's eating. But of course it's also funny. And then the narrator Fanny's mother is known as the bolter because she's always bolting out of marriages. And she turns up with this man who saved her but can't speak any English, and says, well, you know, you can't expect him to... He saved my life. We must stay together. when Uncle Matthew was trying to get her to get rid of him. And it's just so funny and so lively, and full of English eccentricity, really. So if anybody ever did, not that we are all like this these days, that's the thing. If anybody ever did want a crash course in English eccentricity, this would be the book for them.
Right. I mean, it does also deal with these kind of, I guess, timeless themes, you would say, of kind of growing up and love and all that sort of thing. I mean, is that also part of, I guess, why it still remains relevant and still fun to read?
I think so. I think it completely skewers possibly that universal feeling, possibly felt more by girls than by boys, when you're sort of waiting to grow up and also you're waiting for love to arrive. There's a very brilliant novel actually coming out next year. I've just read it. It's called Girls by Emma Klein. Again, very modern, but actually it's the same sort of thing. Waiting around for adventure to happen, I think, is a theme that will always mean things to people.
And just quickly, we should mention that all of these Mitford's works are being reissued, I guess. Do you want to tell us a little bit quickly about
that? Yeah, so they're all beautiful. The design is gorgeous. The artist who's designed them all is, she's painted them, she's called Lourdes Sanchez, and they are... Her collected works has been republished in one beautiful edition, and then they've all been done separately, and they're all gorgeous. But The Pursuit of Love is fairly by far my favourite. So that's the one I would recommend first. And then if you like that, Love in a Cold Climate. And then just carry on and don't stop.
A new edition of The Pursuit of Love, complete with a newly designed cover, has just been released by Penguin. To finish the programme, Cathy, we asked you to recommend an upcoming publication that you're looking forward to in 2016. First of all, come on, what have you chosen for us?
Well, there's so many good books coming out next year. It was a heart-wrenching decision to just pick up one. But the one I have chosen is The Outrun by Amy Liptrot. This is coming out in January. And it's a stunning novel. It's described as nature writing, but I sort of don't think it is really, which I mean as a compliment. It is a lot about nature, but it's also about addiction and recovery. So the author grew up in Orkney. It's a memoir. The author grew up in Orkney, where her parents had gone to kind of try to create a new life. Father had a lot of mental health problems, and he was committed pretty much on the day that she was born. And, you know, it's sort of swinging in and out of periods of illness and periods of being better. And she grew up on Orkney and then fled to London looking for adventure, and then started to drink too much.
Found the adventure, but also
found the problems that go with adventure. She writes Orkney beautiful, but she also writes London extremely beautifully. And then she ends up back in Orkney again, sort of washed up, off the booze, trying to work out how to live. And Orkney does sort of restore her, and swimming in the freezing cold sea and sort of hanging out with the birds. So in that sense, it is nature writing. But I found it so interesting because it's just it's a portrait of a person trying to work out how to live and how to accommodate the demons that are in them. And then, and also it's how you live with the legacy of mental illness in your family, which I think is a really interesting subject and very well done here.
Is it written in the first person? Is this a sort of first person?
Yeah. So it's a memoir. She's a beautiful writer. I mean, I hope she could just go on to write novels because she's a beautiful writer. This is her first book.
This is her first book, published work. Okay. I mean, it's interesting. Yeah, this kind of, the idea of the return home is quite a familiar trope. And I guess it's always fertile ground for writing because it's, you know, it brings up nostalgia and memory and kind of sadness and all those things. I mean, how does she treat this kind of return home in The Outrun?
Well, I think there's all the contradictions and difficulties that it involves, because going home is a complex thing. And I think going home, we sort of have this idea, don't we, that the hero, the heroine, leaves home in search of adventure and then comes back successful. Because what happens when you don't? That's what it made me feel of. It made me think, you know, of there's lots of Irish songs about going, you know, about being a rover and leaving home and then wanting to come back successfully with money in your pockets. You know, when I come back, I'll have money. When I come back, I'll be able to buy stuff for people. It sort of made me think of that. It's the opposite of that, really. And it's having to go home unsuccessful and having to go home needing to be cured. And I thought that was so interesting. And the juxtaposition and the differences between London and Orkney and what they have to offer is just incredibly powerful. And she writes both so well. I went to Orkney for the first time this year, and it is the most beautiful, amazing, magical place, which was why I picked this book up, actually, because I'd become a bit interested in Orkney. And I'm just so glad I did, because it's such a wonderful, wonderful read.
And without giving too much away, I mean, where do we leave off at the end? Does it bring us right up to the sort of present day, to where she is now? Or
yes, and I don't think it's giving away too much to say that the ultimate feel of it is hopeful. I mean, she spares us nothing of the some of the agonies of her troubles, but you end the book feeling that you've had sort of a ringside seat, really, at someone struggling with their demons, and kind of, sort of hopefully but humbly, fingers crossed, kind of coming out on the upside.
And structurally, how long do we spend in London in the middle? I mean, obviously you said it's kind of chalk and cheese, you know, you're going from this most completely rural kind of wild place to London, which is one of these big metropolises. I mean, how much time do we spend in each place?
Do you know, it's an interesting question. I can't really think how it splits up that way. I think one of the things she does so well is evoke place. So both London and Orkney really reflect and are symbolic of her own state of mind. And one of the things I still don't know the answer is to what, and I'm not sure she does actually, is to what extent it's the place that's having the effect on her, or kind of her that's having the effect on the place. And I think all that's quite interesting. I think if you read it feeling that you had demons of your own to battle, you would be more inclined to head to Orkney than to London.
It's probably, a good way of putting it. And in terms of the kind of cast of characters, it feels like this is quite a sort of lonely work, but are there other people around particularly in Orkney, but also in London. I mean, is there a cast of characters here?
Yeah, so reading about her family is really interesting. And then also the London bits, you know, then she goes to rehab in London as well. And that's fascinating. And actually often funny. It's often funny. And the her sort of disastrous relationship that goes wrong. That's all very well done. And again, this, so she knows lots of people. When she's in this sort of very, well, sort of addict stage, she's constantly looking for distraction and going to parties and staying up all night with different people. And yeah, all that's really done. So that's, so again, there is this it's sort of set up so that you feel London is full of all these, full of noise and people, and then Orkney is full of different noise and, you know, obviously more wildlife probably than people.
Right. The Outrun by Amy Liptrot will be released in January by Canongate. And that, I'm afraid, brings us to the end of today's show. Thanks very much to my guest, Kathy Rensenbrink. And if you're still stuck for present ideas, then perhaps give Kathy's memoir, The Last Act of Love, a go, which was released earlier this year by Picador. You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Matt Alagaya. My producer was Holly Fisher. We'll be back at the same time tomorrow to talk Star Wars with film critic Tim Robey. But for now, goodbye from me, and thanks very much for listening.